When you're building a culture of belonging, every word counts. That's why Textio brings the world's most advanced language insights into your hiring and employer brand content. Our industry-leading approach to artificial intelligence and machine learning provides the tools needed to find more diverse candidates. In short, Textio builds more equitable workspaces, guiding businesses and writing more inclusive job posts. And we're building on that success by bringing even more products to the market for all people who share our belief that language matters. Words have power, and at Textio, we harness that power to increase the access and availability of value-driven work for everyone.
Hello and good evening. Thank you for joining us. This is the Access Point in Living Color. So brought to you by Living Corporate. And let me tell you a little bit about Living Corporate. Living Corporate is a digital media network consultancy focused on workplace diversity, equity, and inclusion. Living Corporate centers and amplifies Black and Brown voices in the workplace through digital media production and business-to-business consulting. The network offers a variety of programming, including The Access Point. The Access Point is a weekly webinar focused on preparing Black and Brown aspiring and experienced professionals for the workforce by having the real nuanced talks they don't know they need. During each episode, we examine real changes you face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. Now, here's the disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated. Good evening. One more time. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds. I am an author, the author of Intoxicating Followership in the Jonestown Massacre, and co-author with Dr. Lonnie Morris for When Leadership Fails. I am also a professor at the oldest HBCU in the state of Maryland, Bowie State University, and I'm a management consultant. My area of focus and research is toxic followership. Why in the world do people follow bad people? With that, I'm going to turn it over to my awesome co-host, Dr. Lonnie Morris Jr.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy. Always a pleasure to be here with you. I am Dr. Lonnie Morris. I am a management consultant and professor. I spend my days helping extremely talented and accomplished professionals unravel complicated organizations to figure out why people hate their jobs and to make you hate your job less. Tonight is an incredible show. We are on the cusp of the midterm elections, and so we're bringing all things politics into this conversation as we try to unpack, what it means for the approaching election day and how we can bring our full selves and all the things we feel about race, equity, sexual orientation, immigration, abortion, gun laws, social justice into the workplace as our whole selves and still get along. We have two incredible guests today, and I'm so excited for them to join us. Our first guest is Darren Swain, who is a seasoned business development professional with a passion for relationship mapping with industry stakeholders, thought leaders, regulatory communities, and public officials. In more than 20 years of securing lasting agreements and partnerships across various agencies, he's been a Maryland state delegate through the Maryland General Assembly, both as an elected official and an appointed official. He served on the Judiciary Committee, Legislative Black Caucus, the Commerce Committee, and Government Matters. He's helped agencies raise more than $25 million through donor relations and product development. He is also the national president of the Bowie State University Alumni Association. Our second guest is Reginald Benbow. Let's make sure you correct me on that, Reggie. And he is Benbow. So I was right the first time. There we go. Dedicated his life to transforming systems and fighting for equity. Reggie began his career as a sixth and seventh grade science and social studies teacher in Baltimore City Public Schools. I used to work there. Through Teach for America, he led his students to great results by implementing data-driven instruction. Subsequently, he helped reduce healthcare costs and expand access by managing high-impact projects as a business consultant for leading health plans and providers. He is highly engaged in the community, a former candidate for the Maryland General Assembly, and currently a Big Four management consultant in the area of workforce transformation. Welcome, Reggie. Welcome, Darren.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really great to be here with you tonight.
Appreciate it so much. So let's dive into this, right? So we are thinking about elections next week, and I think we've seen so many things happening, particularly with the divisiveness that emanates from political talk. We just saw Nancy Pelosi's husband attacked this week. We know we've got lots of things happening. We saw New York City in terms of laws. We saw New York City change the vaccine mandate not too long ago, I think back in September. We saw also that we've got this pay transparency law coming October. We've seen a bunch of things happening. And so I'm wondering why, when we think about political issues, why are those things so problematic to discuss at work? Why don't you start us off, Darren?
Well, first and foremost, just thank you, Dr. Morris, and Dr. Edmonds. I think that a lot of times we are somewhat reluctant in bringing and sharing, you know, these things in the office and in the workplace, because a lot of people fear, I think, retribution, first and foremost, from maybe superiors in the workforce or in the workplace anyway. And so it makes a lot of people more reluctant to do that. Then it's that age old saying that most people pass down in their social circles and social circles and in their families about the certain things you just don't discuss, you know, in the workplace, and that is politics and religion. So most people sort of shy away from sort of sharing those things. And because of that, it sort of left to sort of just be one of those things that perhaps is commented on, but people go to great lengths not to share their real deep-seated views. But I think with the advent of what I would call the Trump era here, it has sort of opened up or pulled back some of the layers of the onion that in late other years would not have necessarily been acceptable and or allowed to happen in some instances about views and deeply seated views, and certainly those that are controversial. So I think that is some of what and why those things are sort of avoided or have been avoided in the past, I would say.
Thank you so much. Reggie, what are your thoughts?
You know, to echo off of former Delegate Swain, I would say, because it makes the majority, i.e., you know, white, middle-class people who are in management, feel uncomfortable. That was my own experience running for public office while working for a Big Four consultancy, is that they didn't want to have the conversations because they were afraid that it would expose some of their own, you know, biases, that it would inject quote-unquote politics into the workplace. And with the midterm elections happening now, of course, November 8th is the final day to vote, there's still such a dearth of conversations around such an important election. And, you know, right now I still have friends who are running for office in Maryland, on my way now to an event to help one of them who's running for school board, because our school board elections are so critical. So we should be able to talk about that, but it makes the majority uncomfortable, in my experience.
Thank you so much. Now, I want to stick with this idea of being uncomfortable, because I saw this on CNN Business, and I'm thinking with all these really important issues that we're dealing with right now. And in fact, I just heard this on NPR today, that there's this thing of the slavery loophole related to, right? And that there are five states right now about to take this language out of the Constitution for their state around slavery being allowed for people who are incarcerated, right? So Alabama, Oregon, Vermont, Louisiana and Tennessee are all voting on that right now. So the thing here is, related to this idea that I saw in CNN Business, if we've got issues like that that are so important that I want to go to work and tell somebody, I don't think we should have this slavery piece. We need to remove that language. But labor attorneys told CNN Business, when it comes to politics, and this is to your point, Darren, there is very little upside to discussing politics in the workplace. Keep your political views to yourself and out of work, and say as little as possible if you're stuck in a conversation with someone about it. So let's follow this some. If there are things like slavery in 2022 on the ballot, how come we can't talk about it?
Well, can I?
Please.
To start on that line. Well, see, this is the thing, and it goes to certainly where Reginald was talking about, and I think that, or had mentioned anyway, the fact that even though there's a majority, or there is a section of the majority that may in fact agree with taking away, doing away, and making right the wrongs of the past, the unfortunate part for them is that they've benefited from the injustice and or whatever that wrong may have been in the past. And as such, a lot of their status and what they experience today is rooted in a lot of that wrongness. So to now to talk about fixing it means that there's going to be some uncomfortable conversations. There even should be some pain and hurt, not in the sense of physical, but maybe financial, in the sense of righting the wrongs of the financial hurt and harm that has been, you know, preyed upon, you know, minority persons in this country. And as such, it creates this real reluctance to sort of engage in these conversations of things that are obvious, right? That should be fixed, that yeah. needs to be fixed. And because, you know, there's this root of white supremacy and what all those things, regardless if you agree with it or not,
yeah.
that is baked in it that causes the lack of or the reluctance of engaging that conversation for whatever reason. And I think that that's part of the problem that we end up having.
That's also part of controlling. You control the conversation, you control the laws that support the conversation or not. You control the narrative.
Right.
That's a word right there. That is a word that even through, and I know something else I saw, and this was in the same piece on CNN Business, that while your freedom of speech is protected, all the things you may want to say related to politics may not be, because organizations can create policies around not displaying paraphernalia. They can create policies around what you discuss related to stuff. The things that are protected would be around employment law. So this is really interesting to look at this idea of power and control, just as we talk about conversations.
I have I wanted to just chime in for a moment. Is that okay?
Go ahead.
There is a listener who put in the chat, you can't ask lawyers about whether corporate folks should talk politics at work in America. LOL. The default answer will always be no.
There we go. Guess we got our answer right there.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, too, it's really interesting because I think the very interesting part about, you know, in the environment in the workforce anyway, is that, you know, that deep fear, I think of retribution sort of limits the transparency of feeling whether right, exactly. wrong, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. And because people fear that they're gonna sort of read the temperature of maybe the corporation and see what that opinion that they may have, how it may go up against that of the majority or the environment of the corporation. I think that that plays a huge role in it as well, you know.
And may I jump in because, and you know, I'm an intersectional person. We all are. We all have multiple and intersecting identities. But you know, I identify as a Black gay man, and I have and get the sense, you know, that it is more acceptable to talk about until recently LGBT issues, and certain things are more popular. Like it's so popular in corporate America to stand against Asian hate. Right now, to stand against anti-Semitism. And then, of course, in 2020, Black folks, we had our moment from May 28th.
We had a moment.
Yes, we had about 60 days over the summer, but now we can't talk about it any more. You know, what is that about?
Well, and I think that to your point, Reggie, is the sort of the problem or the interesting paradox in our community that while we have, I think, have been subjugated to harm so many more times often than most, I would dare say, because we've been easily identified in terms of skin color. But when we throw in some of those other variables in terms of our sexual orientation and all of these other things, it always seems that those other things are more easily embraced by persons outside of our community and are defended. But when it comes to the core of who and what we are in terms of our race, I think those things are less embraced. We're given a moment, like you said, and then it's a fleeting moment that
fleeting moment.
Is never, never sustained. And so, you know, it's just really interesting that you bring that up, because I look at what's going on with Kyrie Irving and with the Boston Celtics, right? Mm-hmm. And not with the Boston Celtics. I'm sorry, he was with the Boston, but with the Brooklyn Nets. I'm sorry. Yeah, Nets. So,
can you briefly share what that is for those who may not, our listeners who may not know, be aware of that?
So Kyrie, he tweeted out his support of a video of a movie, anyway, that has some references in what the Anti-Defamation League, anyway, described as anti-Semitic, right? So there was a huge uproar for him to denounce the video, even though other parts of it deal with other liberation issues and things of this nature. But that there are portions of it from what they describe as being, you know, anti-Jewish or however they want to describe it. And so there's been a huge and uproar over that. And I think on the heels of the Kanye West incident, it seems like when it comes to anything anti or that African-Americans, I would just want to deal with the whole African-American part, and then we can deal with other issues to it with it as well. But with African-Americans, why do we get the brunt of the punishment that comes with those types of things as opposed to others? Because I said, I don't recall there being as a huge uproar or fear over when our president of the United States supported,
there we go,
defended, we will not be replaced by Jews in Charlottesville. I said, where was the, maybe I missed it. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's consistent with what goes on in our country.
Yeah. So I think that at times in our community, there's this perplexed thing that we sort of then embrace. It's like, wow, why do we get that as opposed to this, right? In terms of Kyrie being, singled out Kanye. Now, not to say, and I, with all full disclosure, I don't necessarily agree with most things that Kyrie Irving sort of embraced, and certainly even more so with Kanye West. My goodness, that's a whole nother show we can have. But certainly I think that in our community, we have to just really be careful with how we allow the attacks on them, or at least the scrutiny, the unfair scrutiny sometimes on them, to take place. In terms of the context of what we say, right?
Yeah, that was, of course, it's so obvious. I was going to, add that, to your point, race and being racialized as Black, like you said, is a visible marker. It's immutable versus the majority. They can be LGBT. They can be and Jewish. They can be and disabled, but so they can partake in those other intersections, but they can't partake in the intersection of being Black. Right. And so will we ever, become popular like some of the other isms?
Well, Regine, can I say this real quick?
Go ahead.
Dr. Morris. So, but you know what's interesting about this whole thing is that there seems to be this, what my great grandmother would say, picking and choosing.
Right? Come on,
picking it, right. She would, pick and choose. So they, our culture, right? Our music, our fashion, all of those things are easily and readily embraced by everyone. We lead. We are the ones that sort of push the envelope, create the coolness of cool. And all, we even turn Indeed. Some of their things that aren't cool into cool with us. But then when it comes to our views, when we sort of stray into the geopolitics, as I explained to my brother and some of his younger friends, is that you will notice that there then becomes this, oh, hold up now. You guys can do whatever you want over there, call each other nigger, kill each other, do whatever it is you're going to do. But when you start talking about the geopolitics of the Palestinians versus Israel versus this versus that, then hold up. We ain't playing with that now. Stay in your place, Kanye. Stay in your place, Kyrie, and those things. So, and Dr. Mark, anyway, those things. So,
So I want to follow this a little bit, because this idea of who's being held accountable for the language and expressing views, and how you're supporting ideas, or even like tangentially, right? If it's not exactly you're retweeting something, because what we've been seeing across the generations, particularly with the youngest generation entering the workforce, they have been pretty consistent with saying, we want the workforce, we want the employers to do better. So there was something in Fortune just last week about how people are responding, employees are responding to what's happened with Roe versus Wade. And that they're saying, employers are saying, employees are saying, we don't think our employers are doing enough to take a stand on this. And people are leaving, because we've been talking a lot on this show about aligning personal values with organizational values. And they're saying, if you can't stand up for this, then we got to go. So my question around this is, when we're thinking about the accountability spectrum here, if employees are pushing back on employers, but it seems like the individuals, particularly when they're people of color, particularly when they're Black people with a voice, we are the ones who are being held accountable in a larger way. How do we shift the dynamics there? Reggie, why don't you start us off?
Oh, that is such a great question. And, I would relate it back to, do we have enough sponsorship? Are we in the leadership? It's so connected to the other isms of not having the proper representation in the leadership levels, such as, I know, if we get into a situation, can we call on, a sponsor to help alleviate that? Or are we just going to follow the policies and be reprimanded by the corporate, you know, HR folks? And can we create the governance structures? Yes, same here. Can we create the corporate governance structures that take in feedback for line level employees? I'm especially thinking of, I'm, you know, this is Twitter, so we see the videos from, you know, American Airlines, Spirit, etc., of Black frontline level employees getting in trouble for going up against Karens and defending themselves. I know we're thinking about it in, you know, living corporate, the white collar jobs, but also for those frontline level employees of the McDonald's and the Starbucks of the world. I think about how can we create
the
safety
essential
for
employees,
men
right?
Because
yeah, the essential employees, that's it.
And healthcare workers as well. So I think we, yeah, that's another great point of discussion.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to add that. So that goes to our lack of controlling the institutional controls of corporations, right? And to your point, Reggie, because we aren't the heads of most HR sections of corporations, we aren't the VPs of H, you know, we don't own the larger corporations, you know, I don't know, we're not the majority in them. And because of that, we are then subject to whatever that punishment is that may come because you choose to recognize, identify, and or speak to whatever your issue may be, right? So not controlling those institutional things is something that creates problems for us. And I look at, you know, as you see change by and from when minorities become the majority in certain things, but still the majority still controls certain institutional aspects of things.
Yeah,
you've noticed that it's the same old, right? It don't change. It's like it's the same because those institutional levers are still controlled by the majority, right? I look at how, and really quickly, how, you know, in politics, as we look at jurisdictions that have gone from, like, for instance, in my county, right, we've gone from majority white to majority Black in Prince George's County, where education and income for the first time in the history of this country went up and not down, right? But what happened in doing that is that the financial institutions were still controlled by the majority, the banks, all of those things that wealth and all those things,
those things that
allow lobbyists and all of those things are still controlled by the majority. So what ends up happening is that even though you have political and numbers and voting, in order to get into office, you need what? Money to run your campaign. So if you can't afford to run your campaigns, and the only people that can help you run your campaigns are the majority, guess what you're going to do? You're going to look out for the majority interest for the most part, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's part of it. But anyway, yes.
It is control, the C word. The C word tonight is control.
We need a bell. When we might say it's control, we're going to ring a bell. Ding, 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 ding.
Right.
Oh, you have something else, Dr. Wendy?
No, I was just thinking every time I'm listening to the comments, you know, what comes to mind is the word control.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. So where does the power really lie? Does the power is it in you know, just in conversation, or is it in reality?
Dr. Wendy, can I just talk on that real quick? And Reggie, I'm sure you would agree. So let me give examples, real life examples of that whole control word. And I, to go back, even with, like, for instance, with the HBCU lawsuit here in the state of Maryland, right? When we knew that for years there was discrimination against, you know, HBCUs in terms of funding and programming and all of those things, right? For years, it's been like that for years. However, the system, the institution, which is the system, the university system of Maryland, was not promoting the fulfillment of funding the lawsuit. They were really against it. So they controlled all of the HBCU presidents could not speak up
and be for years. For years.
They had to talk against it. They had to go up and do all of those things. However, we knew that it was wrong. The judge came back and said, hey, that suit, some aspects of it we don't necessarily agree with. However, there are several aspects of it that we do, and you guys should do that. Then on top of that, when you throw the political overlay on it, the state's been run by these Democrat governors, right? They're supposed to be quote unquote friends with the African American community that could have settled and paid these lawsuits, right? And I bring this example up because about the word control. So the control of the institutions is what's key to the fairness and righting the wrong and making these things work the way that they should work, and then allow for freedom of expression, to your point, Reggie, whether it's about you know, the LGBTQ, and I think those issues are more likely to be embraced in the broader community because it's safer for them. It makes them feel comfortable, and some of them can identify. But racial issues is something that
it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it goes way down, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So I want to shift slightly here because I think there are some important connections between what we're talking about in terms of political dynamics in the political space, political arena with elected officials and with laws and lawsuits, and how that relates to what we see in terms of organizational dynamics, right? So there are some similarities, I think, to what we deal with when elections are approaching and how we're talking about maybe not talking about that stuff to what we deal with in the workplace. Earlier this year in the summer, a study came out in the Nigerian Journal of Management Sciences, and they're looking specifically at this idea of workplace politics. And they describe it as these objective assessments of the level of influence and power that employees use to gain advantage and safeguard interests, right? That sounds like the big C word, right, Dr. Wendy? And they said it's the result of things that the politics, workplace politics, result from abuse of power, limited resources, inadequate controls, favoritism, inadequate workloads, inadequate reward systems, and that there's a direct correlation between workplace politics and performance, that people will often go along to get ahead. So if we see that in politics, and we're talking about creating people relinquishing some controls, that we create some space for freedom of expression, if that's what we see in politics and it's carrying over into organizations, then what are we supposed to do at work? How do we manage the politics in the workplace? Reggie, why don't you start us out?
Ooh, another doozy. You know,
I took a class in a minute.
Yes, I took a class once that was called Power in Politics, and it's, you know, encapsulates it perfectly, and it really focused on the 8 principles of influence that you can use. And then a great example of that is Robert Moses. You know, many people, you know that he like really engineered the modern civic infrastructure of New York, you know, from the tunnels to the bridges to the park system, but he was never elected. He was just an appointed official, but he amassed so much power. Right. And, you know, had successive appointments through different mayoral administrations. And his, like, you know, appointment title was, like, Director of Parks and Recs. It wasn't even, like, you know, Deputy Mayor or anything. But he had so much influence. And I think as that relates to, you know, us, and no matter where we are, whether we're a teacher, as I've been a classroom teacher, or in consulting and banking, you know, maybe think about your followership in the workplace. Like, do you encourage and inspire other people to want to follow you? Are you investing in other people so that they'll, you know, want to, you know, feel a loyalty towards you as well? So I think you can use those principles of influence, you know, inspirational leadership, you know, relational leadership, amass a following in the workplace.
I love that. Darren, you have some thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's sort of coming up with your formal, informal game plan of survival and success, right? And part of that would be, how do you create a mentorship? Mentorship would be a part of it, but really your own corporate board, right? Your board of advisors who would help you to navigate those waters of the corporate world. It would include a person who you see as being good at navigating the politics of the workplace, right? Who's that person that is keen at being the expert in a field, and how do they hone in on that expertise to make themselves valuable to the workspace, right? Who's that person who has that social skill that can go into any room and make everybody smile, right? Everybody that is not born with that gift, right? So who's that person on your board that you can lean on and lean in to that can help you with that? And then who is that person that you see as having some common interest of yours that can see you as an asset, willing to and worthy of investment in to help usher your career along? Because a lot of times it's what people know and what schools they may have gone to and all those things, but it's also your likability, right? And your luck of having people.
You mean somebody needs to like me at work?
Yeah, that might
I would say so.
Right. Yeah, that might help. Because
you know, we're quick to say I don't come here for people to like me.
Well, you gotta do the work for it, because you may not want to aspire to go too high in that place, then, right?
How about even thinking differently about company politics? Because every time you hear that term, for most people, it's has a negative connotation, right? It's toxic. It's frustrating. You know, people are gossiping. They're backstabbers. I don't want any parts of it. I come to work, and like Dr. Lonnie said, I'm not here to make friends. I'm going to go home. You mean you have to me?
Put in this 9 to 5, and I'm out.
And then I'm gone. But really thinking about office politics in a way that it can benefit you, with all the things that both of our guests said here tonight, is definitely true. And sometimes people even engage in company politics unknowingly. So they may say, nope, I don't do that. But when you say things like, okay, this is off the record, or this is between us, those normal things like, catch me later, I'll meet you, you know, at the bar. Any of those types of conversations really is company politics, because for some reason you're trying to gain or disseminate some information for some purpose, whether it is personal, to promote something that you believe should be done differently or better, or for the right reason. Nevertheless, it is company politics. So when people say that they don't, they usually in some even without effort, they do participate in that. And, you know, coming from the world of academia, sometimes I think people think they're in our classes. I think when they get to work, right, they're going to be graded. I come to work on time. I show up. I do my work. I work well. I work hard. I work on the weekends. Somebody's going to treat me well and give me a good grade, good pay, something in return. And that's not it, because it's not enough. You have to have those soft skills that's going to help you to navigate. You have to have personal board of directors, which is what Darren said. You have to have that to help you to navigate these situations. But if we begin to look at the company policy as a means of building strategic relationships with stakeholders, right? Begin to think of how this is going to help you position and never compromise your integrity. I'm not speaking to do that, but these things can be done in a very positive fashion with purpose. And so those are, when people see that and see how people are operating to get things done, to move the in the right direction, to change a toxic culture, it takes company politics. It takes a lot of work and a lot of courage. So, you know, you can look at who's doing that and follow that model. You can think of ways to do it yourself and get help with your personal board of directors.
So I love that. And when I was still working, providing direct service in organizations, I was often a change agent, mostly coming in after about 3 years somewhere else. And so the shifting things around, and I would spend easily the first 3 or 4 weeks in any new organization going to meet all the people who were either gatekeepers or decision makers. They manage resources, either people or finances, or they manage somebody else's schedule. Hey, how you doing? I want to get to know you so that when anything comes up, I can go back and connect, right? So that's the politics. The politics is about the meeting before the meeting. Mm-hmm. So we know what the agenda is from the VP, but I want to talk to you first because here's what I'm thinking. I want to make sure we frame the conversation when we get in there together so we both get what we need. Those are the things that people sometimes forget about when we're thinking about politics. And as to your point, Dr. Wendy, it doesn't have to be this negative, toxic thing. It's about creating space for mutual benefit and great relationships, right?
And remember that just because you don't want to play politics or be a part of politics doesn't mean politics won't run up and grab you by the neck and from behind.
Tap you on the back.
And you have no idea. One of the examples that I can think of during my career was the negative press about my character. Not that I ever did anything to anyone, but it didn't stop the rhetoric from one person who had this a spell is the only way I can say. But the negative press, and I just could not figure out how to stop this, because I stayed away from politics and it didn't help the situation. And through the recommendations of my personal board of directors was just get outside of those circles and start building relationships with other people.
Boom.
And that's what, say that again.
Boom, that's it.
I'm telling you, it worked, because no matter what the individual said, other people begin to look at them crazy, like, that's never been my experience. Well, I've worked on the project. This isn't what I'm seeing. And until it stopped, until it went away. So I had no control except to just take myself out of that realm and begin to build relationships with people I otherwise would never have had any reason to do so. So we have to think about what politics is and really understand politics, because you're not going to play it doesn't mean you will not be affected by it.
Dr. Wendy, can I just add to that, is that the best, one of the and you described it and you said it out so well, but one of the best things I've found, because having been involved with stuff like that, is so funny. You bring it back, these memories, like almost like, you know, deja vu, right? And so one of the things that the best way to defend against that is to have an offense, right? So you have to be very intentional in your relations with folk that are connected indirectly and directly. And to your point, making sure that their experience with you is such that because you know, you can't control, and I've shared this with some friends of mine. They say, oh, Darren, well, you know, such and such said this about you, did it. I said, you know what? I don't spend time I can't control them. I can't control that. They're going to say it. They're going to do it. Whatever the case is, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
They're going to take stuff and blow it out of proportion. They're going to do that.
Yes.
However, what I can do is to make sure that those people that I do come in contact with, they're going to be able to say that, well, know, because that's not been my experience.
That's not my experience. Yep.
That's not my experience. And then the other thing that you got to do is tell your board and your ring around outside of that board is that you have to help me. And this is part of the office politics. When those conversations come up, to the extent that you can, you have to stop them by saying that's sponsorship right there. You have to stop. I said, so if you're in the environment in a room with people that are doing that and creating those negative things in the office politics, and if you're not stopping it to the extent that you can, then you're part of the problem, right? Okay, so
that's it. Go ahead, Reggie. I know you want to jump in on this.
Yes. So, you know, quick update. It came across my alert that since we were talking about it, that Kyrie Irving was suspended for failing to unequivocally disavow anti-Semitism, although he donated
$500,000.
But
even your money don't get you out of trouble.
Exactly. And, you know, since we were talking about politics, and since I just lived through a 12-month campaign, and probably Darren will appreciate this, I think everybody should use one of the tactics from political messaging that's called a message box. And it's basically like a SWOT analysis. You, in the four quadrants, you write, you develop, what do I say about myself? What do my opponents, or you could say your leadership, your employees, your coworkers, what do they say about me? What do they say about themselves? And then what do I say about them? And so you're going to, go through that reflective exercise. And then, of course, by picking out what your opponents or, you know, different stakeholders say about you, pick up on the opportunity areas and areas that you need to defend against. So me being a first time candidate running against the incumbent and people that have been in the Democratic Party for ages, I said, you know, they're going to say that I'm inexperienced, you know, I have a corporate background and I'm, youthful and all of that type of stuff. And I use that to develop my message around, yes, let's have change in leadership.
Oh, I'm about to run for office now. You just gave me the formula. I'm about to run for office.
Yeah, Taking notes.
That is just so appropriate. But Dr. Morris said something that's so key, especially in politics. And you know this because that's how some of these incumbents are able to stay in. And I was the beneficiary in a real sense. And I'll tell you that, you know, politics is local, right? It's local. It's about Dr. Morris term is sponsorship, right? I remember in running for office, you know, youthfulness can be such a bad thing unless you have the right sponsor.
Because the grandma's like, you remind me of my son.
See, yes. Right. And then,
you have those stories, Dr. Lonnie.
I'm sure, Reggie, as you know, that corporate, being in the corporate world is such a bad thing until you have the right sponsor who's going to say, you know what, that corporate experience is something that we need in the legislature. Right. so when it comes to that and you have the right sponsorship, so it's relational, it's these relationships, right? That when put in the right place and used at the right time, that can be a benefit. But to your point, Reggie, in running against these entrenched incumbents, it's those same relationships that they have, these favors that they have sort of curried for folk, that they then cash in on. And even though people know that you may in fact be the better choice, right?
Yeah.
Or the better person, right? It's because this person has helped, has done. And it's those same things that when you get in, not to a fault, but certainly to a great extent, you're going to lean on as well, because you're going to want those people that you help to help you. So
this is good. So I want to try something else here, right? So we're talking about the importance of politics, not just at city, county, state, federal government, but also when we look inside into organizations. And some of the same tenets apply. So there are some myths, and I saw this in Harvard Business Review probably last summer. I think it was July 2021, that there's some myths about the office politics. And I think, Dr. Wendy, you started with some of these, right? That you have that it's bad, that it's toxic, that you can either be a good person or you can play politics, but you can't be both, that you can escape it. And you talked about that, Dr. Wendy. I was trying to avoid it and not be involved in those things. That, and this is a funny one, that the politics don't affect your job performance or career. So we know that's a lie. That politics disappear in virtual environments. Come on now.
That's another one of those big X's on the box.
Right. Yeah. And that political intelligence, and so this savvy that we're talking about, not just in the voting arena with elected officials, appointed officials, and city governments, county governments, but that the intelligence around this is inherent. It's what people think about with leaders, right? That what we used to think about with leadership, that you are born with these traits. And what they recommend that you do, and Dr. Wendy, you mentioned this, reframe what politics means to you. So think about it differently. Mm-hmm. Evaluate your style against the environment. And Reg, you talked about that with thinking about these voices and these messagings. Work on your relationship currency and constantly improve.
I like that one.
And constantly improve on how you get along, right? So my question to the three of you is, what's missing from that list? Don't go silent on me now.
Reggie, so, I'm going to say, and I think you were getting to it with the currency, the relationship currency. I like that, but adding on to that, know your worth, you know, like a big thing, you know, again, in politics is you have to, we all have relationships, and, you know, in order to raise money, as there is folks who, you have to map out your network. I took all of my Google contacts, 1600, put them in a spreadsheet, assigned, you know, from $10 to $6,000, the legal limit in Maryland, of how much money I was going to ask them for. You know, people I went to college with and high school, colleagues, all of that, and then went down the line calling and texting them. And so in the workplace, you know, if you maybe want to go up for promotion, maybe map out your network and figure out, you know, the currency, the value of the relationships, and start there, you know, just, you know, make a plan.
I love that.
I like that about making a plan, knowing your organization, your company, agency, in its entirety. Understand not just what you do, but understand the big picture of what is it that this organization does, and then drill down to what is it that is the mission of the immediate organization that you work in, because then you can plot out your strategy. As Reginald says, just plan that out, and then you can determine how politically savvy you want to be. There are conversations that perhaps you need to have to position yourself. What do you want out of your job? Like, sometimes people don't get a job to stay until they retire, which never happens anyway, but stay for a long time. Maybe it's a stepping stone. What does that mean for you? Where do you want to be? And how you place yourself in that organization, how you get to that point before you move up or move out, is going to depend on your relationship currency.
I love that. Wow. Darren, you have some thoughts on it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that to everyone's point, I think that you start with how you want to sort of affect your growth and your place in the organization for the short and midterm, right? How do you want to move up? How and what do you need in order to do that? What skill set, right? What opportunities for growth and exposure, you know, in all those things. But I think another thing that I want to enter or sort of bring into the conversation is, how do we then build legacy support to move on and to help the next group coming behind us. And let me, I just want to frame it right here because mm-hmm. it goes to this whole HBCU thing. I don't know how many people want to call HBCUs and all that other good stuff. But so I belong to this alumni association, right, that's connected with the University of Maryland, that's also connected with the Cambridge University over in Great Britain, right? And so, you know, you sort of get caught up in this thing, damn, do I really belong here? So until you start to sort of...
Imposter.
Yes, the imposter syndrome. Yes, that's what it is. So you're like, damn, so what's going on? So anyway, to really shorten this whole story is that you come to find that none of these people and the success that they've sort of experienced is anything different or foreign from what you can do and what we can do, right? The only difference is that for a lot of them, they are very intentional about their success and that they're very intentional about connecting with those institutions that are either seen as helping them with their success and or are actually a part of their success, right? Whether it's with, you know, the alumni associations or the informal groups that are part of their associations. And I noticed that certain groups of them hang together and are members of certain other clubs and things like that. And so it's sometimes in these very informal settings that they then part information to and with one another that directly benefit them in a professional setting, right? I remember we were at one, and I'm gonna share this with you real quick. So it's this leadership group. And I remember at one of the conversations before one of my mentors, she just passed, Georgia Sorensen, who was a very big proponent in this whole leadership space and all this other good stuff. But Georgia, I remember she had a thing at her house and she had this lady, I cannot remember the lady's name. I'm trying to remember her name. You guys probably would know her. But anyway, she she was in charge of this huge think tank around leadership, right? And one of the young ladies that was in the group with us, she said, well, you know, I've been thinking about coming to the conference and I want to do some research around, I forget the subject, right? And so the lady around the table, right, she's like, wow, so what are you thinking about doing research? And she said, well, you know, leadership and something else. She said, well, you know, I think we can make that happen. Right?
Yeah.
Not only can we fund it, I think we can fund that for at least 2 or 3 years. We can give you a chance to really do some great and it was just amazing to me.
Mind blowing.
I'm like, damn, this happened over wine, right?
Yeah.
Offered this opportunity for fellowship, for full funding, for all of this stuff. And so I say to myself, how do we as groups of minorities, whether it's a minority in terms of ethnicity, minority in terms of LGBTQ, minority in terms of, how do we not be afraid to empower one another and help both current and future people to be successful in these environments and create these foundations that can help like that? So
I love it. So when we think about the full spectrum of everything we discussed today as relates to politics in the real political arena and in the organization that we know is always a stage for politics, here's what we learned this week. For employees, you need to scrutinize the scrutiny, ask questions, question the source of the criticism, build your board of advisors. And we talked about this multiple times on the Access Point. Who navigates workplace politics? How do you get them on your team? How do they hone in on those skills and build relationships? Who has common interests and who thinks you are worth the investment and can help you move forward? Remember that work is not the same as a class. There are some exercises you go through in a learning environment that aren't the same, and that the exchange is not as direct as you're going to get a grade. You've got to navigate differently in the workplace. See politics as a foundation for relationships, not as toxicity. Be careful if you think that you can avoid politics because it'll sneak up on you. Get out of your bubble. Build relationships with other people. Remember that the best defense is a great offense. So you must be intentional about your relationships with people at all levels. I love this one right here, Reggie, is what is your message box? What do you say about you? What do other people say about you? What do they say about themselves in relation to you? And what do people say about them?
Know your worth, map out your network, question or at least identify what value you bring to the organization and to the network. Make a plan for your for building your relationship currency. Get clear about the big picture for the industry, for the organization, and for your immediate area of work, and then determine how politically savvy you need to be. For leaders and supervisors, we said you must recognize that people's intersectionality is significant and that manifests in their values and possibly in their political views. And so some part of this, and we're talking about maybe not talking about politics, is really about people's values and how they are expressed. Consider that the things you embrace from other cultures that you adopt may also be part of the reason why you are rejecting other things. So understand that balance. Invest in people. Think about the people that follow you and how do you want to set the example for them to emulate. Reframe the notion of office politics for the people within your span of control. This is really about relationships, not about toxic behaviors. If you're in a group or a team, and Darren, you just left us with this part, is empower the people around you in your network to create space for others to be successful and to create a succession plan so that you have legacy there. If you are on someone's board of advisors, so if you were in that group that helps shepherd people, you must be proactive, not reactive. So stand up when they are being wronged. At the organizational level, recognize that majority bias creates levels of discomfort in the workplace that we have to get around. Own up to the roots of majority status and that the wrongs that we experience from the past are always going to come up in political dialogue. Think about your control and question if your desire to manage the environment is connected to your need or desire to control everything. Remember that our freedom of expression is also tied to your relinquishing control. What are you giving? Be careful in understanding who are you giving the brunt of the punishment to. So make sure that we are not unfairly targeting people or making or giving them unfair consequences based on their expression and their actions. Consider what you are embracing from other cultures. Understand that we need to know a start and end for sponsorship. So who helps people of color in your organization navigate without reprimand? Identify the institutional levers that create barriers for employees to navigate these workspaces successfully. That's a lot to take in. So what I want to stop, what I want to ask my guest and Dr. Wendy, what is the black tax here? If we don't take heed to this list of things we've identified, what do we risk? What's at risk? Reggie.
That we risk removing ourselves from opportunity, that we miss blocking our own moments that matter, that can move us up.
Darren.
Yeah, I was just going to say a future advancement. I think if we don't take the opportunity to do what our ancestors did, those who could not read, could not write, but they gave money to start our HBCUs to do things that they would never see the benefit of. They did it so that we can have these conversations now. So we have to do those same things in terms of how we prepare those future generations to be better than what we are now.
Thank you, Dr. Wendy.
I would say it's a risk for not embracing and understanding company politics, the value of company politics. And so if you change a mindset as to what that looks like and how that affects you, there's a way to measure before you jump in and get busy with the politics, and you measure it by your own values, understanding who you are. So I think about what Yana Van Zandt said this weekend at the Black Wealth Summit. She said, check your BS.
Uh-oh.
Check your belief system. That's right. Check your belief system. So that's how you can measure whether you're on the ethical side of politics.
And I'll tell you what I think. If you don't listen to the things we've shared with you tonight, the risk that you run here, the black tax, is you get a Trump. So if you were not actively engaged in politics, you decided you weren't going to step in, you thought somebody else can take care of it, somebody else's vote will carry it, we ended up with that. And look how it's spiraling and continues to impact, continues to infect us. If you decide to step aside when it comes to politics, whether in the true political arena or within your organization, you're left with Trump. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. It is always an amazing conversation. Thank you so much, Reginald. Thank you so much, Darren. I appreciate your expertise and your valuable input. Dr. Wendy, it is always a pleasure to sit beside you and do this. For all of you who are listening, thank you so much for joining us on the Access Point. If you want to continue to connect with us through Living Corporate, here are all of our socials. On the web, we are livingcorporate.tv. On Twitter, we are at Living Corporate. LinkedIn is living-corporate. Instagram is Living Corporate. You can find this podcast on all the podcast platforms, so Google, Spotify, Apple. Like, comment, share, subscribe. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thank you so much.
Living Corporate is brought to you by Doximity. Over 90% of graduating medical students join Doximity to use our tools before earning their doctoral degree. As medicine's largest network, there's an elevated level of responsibility to everything we do. We don't take that responsibility lightly and are committed to working towards a more equitable world inside and beyond our virtual office walls. If you want to learn more about Doximity, make sure you go to your app store, type in DOXIMITY. That's DOXIMITY.